Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass completes his tight end.
And Raja Bell.
Bell has not tackling it. 22 to Raja.
It's all the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Raja Bell hanging out today. We got Barrett Salee is going to join us from my favorite spot in the world, SEC Media Days.
Oh,
this week. The one good thing is it's like college football is kicking off. That's right around the corner. ACC Media Days is going on too. And Larry Fedora, head coach of North Carolina, had some comments on the game of football and where it's headed. Yeah. And I cannot wait to talk about that. Do a little British Open discussion too. But first, do you know what? It's hat day today. I decided to make it hat day.
You decided to make it hat day.
Yeah, because if you're just listening to the podcast, you can't see us. I'm wearing a baseball hat. Like I wear a hat 90% of the time. But I had this throwback idea to just make a day hat day because I was on the Denver Broncos. Fridays were a hat day at practice.
Okay.
Meaning
that like sounds almost, so corny.
But it does. Yeah. But like here's the
but
here's
like
the deal.
For a whole team like
here's the deal. So most teams I played on, Fridays was a lighter practice, but you would still wear your helmet and you'd still wear your shoulder pad.
Right.
Mike Shanahan was super friendly, like player friendly. He didn't want us banging around. So we would just be in shorts and t-shirts and helmets.
Okay.
So if you won, you got to have a hat day, which was just wear a hat, whatever you wanted. You didn't have to wear a baseball hat. You didn't have to wear your helmet.
You weren't practicing that day.
But after games, guys would be celebrating, talking about, we got a hat day on Friday. You would have thought they were giving out like $25,000 bonuses for the win because you got to wear hats. So I'm going to make Thursday might be hat day.
Okay. If I'm going to go hoodie because I'm a hoodie guy. So you go hat, I go hoodie.
All right. That sounds good. Cool. We can rock that. All right. So yesterday we talked a little bit about it. It had broken literally a half hour before we came on and did the pod. Was the Kawhi Leonard for DeMar DeRozan trade. So now it's official. We see some of the other pieces of the puzzle. So the Raptors get Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. The Spurs get DeMar DeRozan and Jacob Poeltl and a 2019 first-round pick, top 20 protected. You were very hard on the Raptors. So I want to go back and just have a listen at your reaction to the Raptors in this trade and what it did for them. We're the number one.
Forget the
best record.
Forget the Raptors.
Forget them. Done.
Forget them. No, I mean they'll be good. They have a culture
third
of winning.
Third best team in the East.
They have a culture of winning. Yeah, I would say, in theory, I mean, I'm going to put Washington up there because of that backcourt. I think that they could be good, and Milwaukee Bucks have to be like licking chops too because they're going to keep getting better. I think so. You've got now a pool of four teams in the Eastern Conference, maybe five, I guess. But they can't be considered the favorite at this point. Like maybe they have the best record in the regular season, but when it comes push comes to shove and it's time to win, like you're going with the Sixers and you're going with Boston, and then you'll start talking about Washington or Toronto.
So before we get to your comments there, we crushed them. So I just did a Ron Burgundy bad, like with Jakob Poeltl. I've done worse. I actually called Steph Curry Stephen Curry one time when I was looking down at a prompter to read something.
Right.
That's where that came from. But are you standing by your Toronto is not any better? Like your comments from yesterday, are you backing off those at all?
First of all, I hate that this stuff is archived because now like I got to really be consistent with what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm stepping all over my own toes. I am sticking with it. In terms of, I think that at the end of the day, Boston and Philadelphia are going to be better than Toronto. So, and I think that a team like Milwaukee will be jockeying for whether they are better than Toronto or not at the end of the day. I do feel a little better about the deal, knowing that Danny Green is in the deal. I didn't know what other pieces were going to move. Like, Jakob Poeltl's a good piece, good young player out of Utah, but the jury's out on whether, like, he's really got a position in today's NBA. They protected Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby. They didn't have to come off of Norman Powell or Fred VanVleet. So there are some pieces in place in Toronto. And in theory, like, you're getting rid of DeMar DeRozan, a two-guard. Danny Green's a decent two-guard. He's not what he was 4 years ago, but he's a solid pro, can defend, can shoot the three. I mean, Kawhi is Kawhi. So there are some pieces there in Toronto. They maintained shape and added, Danny Green and Kawhi. There's a possibility there. But at the end of the day, yeah, I'm sticking with Boston and Philly as my favorites to win the East.
Quick question. Is Toronto better now than they were 2 days ago? Are they a better team now?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Because that's what Vegas says. Like, if you look at the odds of them to win the East, it's they're a stronger bet for them to be there. I think they absolutely are, because if you look player for player, there's no question. But there is a question, actually, because it's how healthy is Kawhi Leonard. If he's healthy, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he was a top three player in the league not that long ago. Do you have a problem with that statement? Because it's
no, I don't.
Ron, it was
top five.
Top five?
Top five.
All right, top five. Yeah. Right, I can see that.
That's not really a problem, but yeah, right, I have nitpick right. with you. Top five.
Right. So, but I mean, if you put him in the Eastern Conference, I think they're a much better team.
I think they're a better team as well. Look, DeMar DeRozan is a really good player, but DeMar DeRozan represents like a past generation of NBA style, right? Like he's not. I mean, he's stretching his range a little bit. I think last year he shot more threes than he ever has. But when you introduce a Danny Green, again, he's probably a better defender than DeMar DeRozan, and really can spread the floor for you, it creates a whole lot of space that hasn't really existed in Toronto because they hadn't had those type of players. So, yeah, again, it's why they say, like, don't go with, like, your first reaction sometimes when you're heated. Right. Like, count backwards from 10 and, like.
News breaks, like, 10 minutes before the show, you got to come strong.
Yeah, you come strong, right? All. That's my job now. I got to come with an opinion. Exactly. But I still, while I think they got better, I think that Boston got better. Like, you're reintroducing Gordon Hayward and you're reintroducing Kyrie Irving, and everybody else on that roster's got a year more experience. They're right now actively trying to re-sign Marcus Smart. I think that Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Dario Saric, you reintroduce Markelle Fultz into the fold, I think they'll be better. So while I think Toronto got better, I still would say that those two teams, in my opinion, are better. And then the wild card, obviously, and this is when it really boiled down when I thought about the trade. Masai Ujiri is like, look, we'll swing for the fences. We got better. Worst case scenario, he's already had this conversation with his boss. We're going to rebuild this. Like, it's time to scrap it. We've done it 4 or 5 years. We've seen the ceiling for what this group could look like. So we'll start the rebuild. Part of that was getting off of the 27-point whatever DeMar was due over the next 3 years. That's the first domino to fall. And so, like we talked about yesterday, if they're able to shed that, Kawhi comes off the books if he doesn't stay put. Jonas Valanciunas opts out. You've got money to work with, and then you can start your rebuild process.
I have a prediction. I don't think the drama is over. Like, I still haven't seen. Oh, I saw Popovich talk yesterday, you know, and I saw some other.
Sure.
But I haven't heard from Kawhi Leonard. I haven't heard him.
So, what do you imagine? When you say the drama's not over, what is your head like concocting in terms of scenarios here?
I'm saying Kawhi might play this out a little bit longer. Like, I don't think he's going to show up anytime soon and say, I love it. Like, well, I can't wait to get to Toronto.
That's not happening,
like,
right.
I think he could still threaten some things. I think he could threaten to not play.
Really? You think he threatened?
I think it's already been reported
right.
that he didn't want to play in Toronto. He had no desire to be there. It's been reported that there are rumors that, you know, reported rumors, all this is kind of what we do in the offseason, but that he might consider still sitting out on the Raptors. So I still think there's drama. Now, I'm not saying, like, if you said, hey, will he be on this squad? I think when push comes to shove,
he'll show up.
Hopefully his people would talk to him and tell him, like, hey, you need to go do this. It's 1 year. Suck it up and go play. But I still think there's going to be some drama to it.
I kind of hope you're right, just for, like, for our job and for stuff to talk about. But, like, Kawhi, where's that? The camera we're in?
Yeah,
remind
yeah talk to
Kawhi.
Him.
Kawhi. Do not sit out another season, bro.
No, like, that's 20 mil giving away.
Well, 20 mil, yeah, and then potential future earnings, because if you do that twice, like, I don't care how good you are, if you do that twice, there are going to be people that try to keep you out of this league forever. Whoever's advising you, if they tell you that, they don't need to be advising you anymore. Don't sit out another season.
One of the things I was bummed about was you had one of these best friendships in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. So we put together a little compilation, the best of Lowry and DeRozan's friendship.
Nah, we just look forward to it as another challenge. You know, we never look at it in a negative way. Man, any chance we get, man, stop playing with me, man. I'm trying to be professional.
That's
excuse
your answer.
Me. I'm sorry.
That's look. Your answer.
I love that.
I'm about to go home, all right?
Hey, world.
Yeah, I'm going to go home. Hit me later, all right? You can't sleep or nothing.
But you want to talk about football?
Probably about 5, 6.
All right, I'm going to FaceTime you.
Hey, come on. Whip it a little
tighter. Here we go. We got it. We got it on the
ground.
We're on the ground, baby.
This kind of makes me sad.
Me too. I'm like tearing up over here. This is awesome. I want, on a serious topic, like DeMar DeRozan opened up about struggling with depression and stuff. I'm a little bit concerned for him. Like, where is he mentally when he's not with his best friend, when he's in a new city, when he's going to San Antonio? Like, how does that play out? And he's already been vocal on Instagram about how he feels like he was stabbed on the back. Like, how does that play out with a player? He feels like he was deceived, and he's got a right to feel that way. But if he's already expressed this, you know, issue he has mentally, like, how does that impact him? How does it impact his state of mind? Because if you are not in a great spot, it does impact your play.
Yeah, it can. What I'll say to that is that DeMar DeRozan's only ever played for one team. Mm-hmm. And you see this a lot with guys that come in. To some degree, it happened with Gordon Hayward. And I was on, like, CBS Sports at the time. And I said to Gordon about Utah, and I caught a lot of flack from Utah. I was like, go, like, see something else.
Yeah.
Because there's other stuff out there, and that's all you know. There's cool. And so to the point about DeMar, I think he'll be fine. It sucks when you get traded. He feels like, you know, they sold him a bill of goods, and, you know, NBA was really vocal yesterday and supported DeMar DeRozan in the way he was treated. Now, sure, like, front offices and they have no responsibility to tell you what they're going to do, but a guy of his caliber, a four-time All-Star, kind of the face of your franchise and has been there forever, I thought you owed him a little bit more than the way they told him one day he was good and then the next day they traded him. But having said that, I think once he gets to San Antonio and realizes that they run a first-class organization, Pop is as, like, player-friendly a coach as there is. Like, their culture, while demanding, is very, very loose. So I think that he will be fine at the end of the day. It's going to suck right now. But once you get there and you allow yourself to be a part of it, because that's the thing. Like, if you don't allow yourself to be a part of it, then it'll suck. But I think once he submits to the culture there, he's going to be fine. He's going to be just fine. And then, you know, the bigger question to me is, like, what this does to, like, the stars in the league and the relationships that they have with GMs as this news continues, you know, to get out that these people are straight, like, lying to their partners. And, you know, fans don't look at it as a partnership,
right?
But it is a partnership. Your front office and your star, like, that's a partnership.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and the front office, he's got to do his job, and LeBron catches a lot of flack for maybe stepping on GM's toes and stuff like that. But any good GM is going to consult. You see Pelinka and Magic doing it right now, talking about running things by LeBron and making sure that, you know, there's a clear path and picture of where they want to go. And so, you know, these relationships are now to some degree in jeopardy the more this type of stuff gets out.
You guys get partnerships. NFL players,
yeah,
anything. Well, maybe a handful of quarterbacks, but even those guys don't get partnerships. And then Aaron Rodgers,
right,
complain about personnel forever, and they don't really.
But different business model.
Absolutely, yeah. It is. So DeMar DeRozan, have a listen to him. This is after he signed his new deal. This was 2 years ago. I get why he feels slighted after you listen to this.
You know, and that was my whole mindset of taking one meeting. Because I put my blood, sweat, and tears in this organization, and, you know, I wasn't done yet. You know, I'm far from done. You know, I felt like, even to this day, I feel like I haven't accomplished what I want to accomplish yet, you know, and that's just the hunger in me, man. And it's just crazy to be sitting here. You know, I'm going to be back for five more years. You know, I am Toronto, you know, outside of where I'm from. You know, I represent this thing harder than anybody. You know, I got so many goals that I want to accomplish still, and I just can't wait to put that jersey back on and, you know, keep going.
All right, so DeMar obviously had his welcome to the NBA moment, like welcome to professional sports. We both agree on that. From the Raptors' standpoint, do you think they did anything wrong? Like, is it wrong the way they handled this?
Yeah.
Is it wrong the fact they traded him?
I don't think that trading him is wrong. I think, like, you do what you have. It's your job. It's your franchise. You do what you have to do to protect it and put it in the best position to win. When you sit in front of a guy no more than 5 days before that and you tell him that you're not trading him to his face and then you trade him, yeah, that is wrong on some level. That's wrong. I mean, it's your right to do whatever you want. But, yes, I do think that that's wrong.
So I was on the New York Giants. I was the starting quarterback. I had just gotten a new contract. Wasn't a huge deal, but it was like a fair deal. And we were playing against the Washington Redskins, and we were, like, struggling a little bit. And Jim Fossil came up to me in the pregame. Like, we were throwing around, doing warm-ups. I was tossing, and he was kind of standing next to me. And he was like, hey, he's like, me and you. He's like, we're going to be like Marino and Shula. He's like, I can see us having a long, you know, we can have a long run together.
Yeah.
I was like, sweet.
Let's do it.
Not that game. The very next game we played the Green Bay Packers, got benched in the middle of the game, and never started again for the New York Giants. And I felt a little bit of that, but I also understand where he was from because he probably realized, hey, I was a young quarterback. I needed a boost of confidence. So
sure.
I get it. Like, I've never been mad at him for saying that. But I think it's just kind of you have to take everything in the business. And it's all business. You have to just be careful with trusting. And it kind of stinks. Like, you have to feel that way, but you always have to watch your own back.
Yeah, of course.
You have to be careful.
So, I thought Kenny the Jet said it well. He was like, somebody caught him like in an airport, and he was like, look, it's business. Mm-hmm. He was like, but in business, if somebody gives you like an assurance that something's going to happen, like, even in business, like, you kind of take their word for that if they give you the insurance that this is going to go down, right? And so, I think that that was the poopy part of this deal. Like, you get Kawhi Leonard for DeMar DeRozan. You think you can retain Kawhi. That makes sense.
Right.
But this is the debate I get into, like, about fans. Like, fans of their team generally are, like, we talk about this all the time. They are good for whatever works with the team. Now, players are invested. You could see the emotion and the investment that he had to Toronto and to the organization. Like, fans then get pissed when guys don't act like that. But when you act like that and you put yourself out there and you're vulnerable and it hurts when they let you go as callously as they let DeMar DeRozan go. So as a player, like, while I loved where I was and I played for the love of the game and I tried to win championships and I was invested wherever I was never going to let a fan or any type of pressure from that organization sway me. I wanted the most money I could get from whoever was giving it to me. And that's the way I treated it because it was my business. So if anybody out there, any of you guys on Twitter, anybody, I don't care. Right. If any of you tell me any NBA player or NFL player or anybody else should do anything other than get every single penny that they can get when they can get it, you're wrong.
Yeah. No, you're spot on. It's it affected my relationship with my coaches. Because I had a real hard time developing a real deep relationship because in the back of my mind, I was always that was my, hey, this guy might bench me, might cut me, might do whatever it was. And it's like, it impacted me. Like I had other players who were like chummy and they'd brown nose and they'd be like, hey, let's go play golf and all this stuff. And I never could fake it that much to get to it.
Yeah.
We're going to do our picks and props. We're going to pick the British Open. It's going on right now. I can't wait to see because I think I know who you're going to pick. I think it's I have a hunch who you're going to get to. We're going to do a little British Open talk a little bit later. But speaking of golf, so Phil Mickelson, greatest short game magician maybe the game has ever known. You've got to see what he did the other day because it was all over the place. It was trending on social media. This was a fan who gave him a challenge, the Flop Shot Challenge.
Did he just stand right in front of him?
Yes.
Like 2 feet? Oh!
That's kind of scary because if it comes up, you wouldn't do it?
No.
I wonder how tall that dude is. He like 5'3"? because I don't know if we could do
maybe,
it.
Maybe, but
taller.
That ball popped straight up.
Yeah.
Off of like a brown surface.
I'm telling you, that's filthy, but that's his fly. He made the flop shot famous.
Could you really? Like, could you do that out of a fluffy lie? I know you could. I've seen you play, so you could probably pop that ball straight up with a little bit of cushion underneath it.
But I wouldn't trust it. I wouldn't trust it like a person standing there, but I could do it. If you gave me you'd have like 10 tries, I could do it.
I like my flop, so I'm pretty sure I could do it too. But off of a brown surface like that, could you get under that ball and get it up?
I don't know if I could do it that close. Like, that dude was really, really close to him. All right, so we talked about the Manny Machado trade. We're going to get in a little bit more into that in a bit. But speaking of trades, like, there is that side of the broken friendships. You're also going to be able to start some new friendships. You've got to hear this sound because this is a couple of his upcoming teammates on the Dodgers. They're out chilling on a boat on the All-Star break. Justin Turner and Alex Wood. Have a listen to them when they find out the news they're getting Machado.
It's done.
It's done?
Yeah, we got Manny, dude.
We got Manny?
Yeah.
We got Manny!
We got Manny, baby!
So organic that was.
I mean, come on. Why did they stage that so bad?
So like, poorly.
Like, and then had the text come in. Like, why are you videoing you guys looking at your phones waiting for a text to come
like,
in?
Like, if you're going to stage it like that, then you just need to be flipping off the boat or doing something, right? The high five?
You know what the sad part is? I think a lot of people think that was organic. Again, that's just the fans who want to believe that. I don't know. I don't think it was there. All right, did you know you can get the best highlights and biggest sports stories right in your inbox every morning with a CBS Sports HQ newsletter? That's right. All you have to do is go to cbssports.com/HQ daily to subscribe. It's packed with all the good stuff you need to see before you start your day. Make sure you go do that. You can also go to cbssports.com and you can get all your headlines, and that's where we're going to go now with some Read and React with Raja.
Okay, brother. Manny Machado deal is finally done. All right, he's traded to the Dodgers. For five prospects. He's viewed as just a rental because he's going to be a free agent this summer. But the Dodgers now are 13-2, right? Is that how I would say it in gambling terms to win the World Series? And plus 280 to win the NL.
I would maybe take a flyer on the plus 280 to win the National League. You are getting a top-tier player, and he doesn't get the love that Bryce Harper gets, and yet if you stack their stats up next to each other, they're almost identical. I think you're getting an outstanding player. Granted, you had to give up a boatload, and the Orioles desperately need it as one of the worst organizations. But I'm glad this happened from a lot of perspectives. We talked to David Sampson earlier in the week about this, and he was like, hey, the Orioles might blow this. They might not do it. Good for Manny Machado. He's going to get to shop around next year, but this is your opportunity to go get a World Series after you've been in this just mired in a bad situation. Gets him a little taste of L.A. in case they want to give him that bigger extension.
Right.
So I think it works out for everybody. Like, this is a win-win for everybody. It's a win for baseball. Like, I think it's a slam dunk. Like, way to go, baseball.
Way to go, baseball. All right. I feel like I'm just getting you warmed up here because I think you're going to like this one. All right. So UNC football coach Larry Fedora at the ACC Media Day says, our game is under attack. I fear that the game will be pushed so far. What? Let me hear we go again. I fear that our game will be pushed so far from what we know that we won't recognize it in 10 years from now.
All right, stop there.
All right. Because here I go. And if it does, our country will go down too. Larry Fedora.
Yeah, he brought the heat a little too strong on that one. I can't fully endorse it. Like, I totally agree. Like, I got into trouble a couple years ago because I said there was a war on football. I do think there is a, I don't know why or where it comes from specifically, but there is an attack on football.
Right.
Like, people are, when you're proposing laws to not let anybody under the age of 14 play tackle football, that is an attack on the game. Because if you do that, you will kill the sport down the road. Where I can't get behind Larry Fedora is where he goes and he says, our country's going to go down.
You don't think they go hand in hand?
Here's where I would defend. No, they don't go hand in hand. Because obviously we survived whatever, 100 years, 200 years before we had football. Right. I think we survived after. But I think what he's trying to say, and this is me interpreting Larry Fedora, but this is my feelings about the game of football as well, is that the game of football offers some really valuable lessons that it can teach you, like character. And some of them, like, you know, the old axiom of, hey, when you knock down, you got to get back again. You got to get up again.
Right.
Like, you have to do that metaphorically speaking. But in football, it actually teaches you how to do that from a physical standpoint because you're going to get knocked down every single play. But by doing that and by learning that, hey, if I get back up, I can do this. I can overcome this. I can get hit in the mouth and I can get back. It does teach you later in life how to do that in business, in your personal life, in relationships, all those types of things. There are so many valuable lessons that the game of football teaches. I think that's what he's saying. Like, our country is a better place if we have the game of football. Hopefully that's what he's saying, because I think he lost me a little bit there.
Yeah, but I agree. I like my kids play football.
Yeah.
I like my basketball kids to play football. And while I am a basketball guy, I do think that football offers some lessons and some just overall mental and physical toughness that other sports don't. And kids can clear those hurdles, realize that everything's okay, and it helps them, you know, in the long run.
So he went on to say, he's basically saying exactly what I'm saying. He's saying, this is from Larry Fedora. He later added, there's no doubt in my mind, I think the lessons that you learn in the game of football relate to everything that's going to happen in the rest of your life. That's exactly what I just said. And if we stop learning those lessons, we're going to struggle. I think in some ways we're struggling now more than we ever have. Are we going to be a perfect country? No, but I think the game of football has a major impact on who we are as a country. Now, my biggest problem, this is what irritates me more than anything, is the reaction when you defend the sport. So within an hour of his comments, Dan Wolkin from USA Today had a comment, an article written, headline up, and it says Fedora should be fired for his comments.
Ugh.
And that's where, like, how can you?
What's the basis? Why?
So because he's reckless, because it's a state-run, you know, university, because he's putting his players in danger, because he's not acknowledging that the risk of CTE. And that's, again, Fedora got himself in a little bit of trouble when he talked about CTE. His quote was, I don't think that it's been proven the game of football causes CTE, but that's been put out there.
Right.
We don't really know yet. He was a little bit too
cavalier,
like,
and
this is across football. We've seen NFL owners bungle this conversation. We've seen coaches screw this up. You have to be very sensitive because there are things that we don't know.
Correct.
And the best thing you can say is that the fear is out pacing the science. Like, that's exactly where we are right now. There's so much hysteria over the sport and we simply don't know. We do know there is CTE. We do know it's a real thing. We do know that there are players who are committing suicide at an alarming rate, but what are we going to do to provide a solution? The game is safer. We're taking those steps to try to protect players more than we ever have. But when you go out there and deny that link is there at all, that's where you get yourself in trouble. But again, for Dan Wolkin to go say, hey, this guy's got to be fired because he has this opinion. He's not a doctor. He's not saying anything that's too, you know, negligent where he should be fired. That's my thing where, all right, there's an attack on the game when you can't even voice your opinion about the sport.
Correct. Correct. Well, let's move on to a guy who's leaving the game. I figured I'd get you fired up on that. Yeah. A guy who played football for a long time, cornerback Darrelle Revis, he officially announces his retirement. Revis says on Instagram, "For the past 11 years, it has truly been an honor to showcase one of my greatest gifts to the world. Today, I'm closing a chapter in my life that I once dreamed of as a kid, and I am officially retiring from the National Football League. My passion to play the game at an elite level brought fun and excitement to the term shutdown corner, which was nearly on the verge of extinction. Covering some of the toughest assignments in league history was a challenge every Sunday, but also an honor within this game we all love. I played 11-year career, 7-time Pro Bowler, 4-time All-Pro, and a Super Bowl champ with the Patriots."
Unbelievable career for Darrelle Revis. Revis Island became an axiom that everybody referred to, and even wide receivers were like, yeah, this guy's the best there is. Quarterbacks completed 46% of their passes when they attempted to throw his way for just 5.8 yards per attempt. He was the definition of a lockdown corner. I love to see players who can go off and walk into the sunset and go out in a high note. Yeah. I do feel like the last couple years of Darrelle Revis' career were a little bit of an afterthought. And it's like, oh, man, I don't like the way it ended for him. But good for him to realize now it's the right time. Now the conversation will he be in the Hall of Fame? I think absolutely. When you look at 7 Pro Bowls, he got the Super Bowl with the Patriots.
Yeah.
Hall of Famer, it'll be there. I don't know if he'll be that first ballot Hall of Famer. But one of the best to ever do it.
Revis Island.
Yeah.
We should have a pick and prop on whether he's a first ballot guy.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
You know who could help us with that?
Our boy Debo.
Picks and props with Debo.
That's right.
Okay, I'm going to pose it. Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer?
I'm going to say no. And it's kind of like the T.O. one. And someone like, if you're beloved by the media, you get in faster. A lot of it has to do with the position you play. Because he's a defensive back, because he didn't have multiple Super Bowls, I'm going to say it takes him a couple tries to get in.
I'm going to say yes.
You are.
I think Revis Island, like his point about the, like that kind of being the position being a little bit obscure, and then he comes along and Revis Island is all the rage, and I'm on Instagram now, and there's this generation of kids that all just want to be shut down DBs, like, you know, you had the Richard Shermans of the world. I think he brought that back into vogue. And I think that he got this fact that he got the Super Bowl, I think was the cherry on top. So I'll give him first ballot.
I hate doing the Hall of Fame discussion. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know historically like the stats of what guys do, what they do get, you know, who gets in, who doesn't, and what the delineation is as far as statistics go. But I'll tell you one thing, all those voters, they're not on Instagram. I'm going to say for that reason alone, he's going to wait a little bit.
That's a pick. We'll have to wait 5 years for the result. So I'm going to add it to the standings in 5 years when Off the Bench with Canell and Bell is still going strong.
Right.
Today we can find out our pick. The British Open teeing off at 1:35 a.m. So a lot of guys are even towards the end of their round right now. Tiger Woods and Hideki Matsuyama don't tee off until 10:31. Tiger slightly favored in this first round matchup. So the pick is just who finishes with a better score on Thursday.
Who are you going with? I'll let you take this one first.
I like Hideki. Hideki's.
You are? You're going to go with him?
I'm going to take Hideki.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I was going to take Tiger. I was going to take Hideki if you took Tiger. I think Tiger is in a really good place right now. And a lot of it has to do with the course they're playing at Carnoustie. We talked about this a little bit, with Mark Immelman. It is burned out. It's dried out. You won't have to hit driver. And Tiger can hit that stinger, that low stinger, let it get on the ground and run. And he's really creative. He even talked about it, how this is course in the British Open specifically. Like, you have to have a creative mind. And that's one of his best strengths, coming up with these unbelievable shots. So I'm going to say Tiger gets the win against this one.
I don't know about
the whole tournament, but in this matchup, he's going to have a better score than Matsuyama.
There are very few times where, like, I pick and I hope that I'm wrong. I hope you beat me.
One.
But I really do hope that I'm wrong on this.
I thought you guys were both going to pick Tiger, so I was going to fade you and pick Hideki. But I have the chance to go ahead of Raja today, so I'm going with Tiger Woods. The prop, it's still the All-Star break for baseball. We picked before the season. I don't even remember our World Series picks, but we're going to do it again. Our updated World Series odds. The Dodgers climbing up that list, but the defending world champions, the Astros, still the favorite at 14-1, or 4-1 rather. The Red Sox and Yankees follow. I'm going Homer again down at the bottom of the list. I don't need to tell you who I'm picking. Phillies at 15-1.
Of course you are. Even though they lost out on Manny Machado because there was rumors he was going to go there. I'm going to go with Yankees. My squad. I'm rolling with my squad. I think they're going to make a move to boost up the bullpen a little bit. Sonny Gray has been atrocious. Everybody knows they're going to try to booster that starting rotation. You got that all those bombers.
Break after this.
I'm going to go with the Yankees.
I'm going to take the Cubs. I'm going to take childhood sentiment. I used to go to Wrigley with my dad, standing room only. I'm going to take the Cubs.
All right, perfect. We like to consider ourselves relevant, right?
Yeah.
I think so. So we also like to talk about what's socially relevant. And everybody was talking about the Toronto Raptors, you know, the trade yesterday. Well, Drake has to chime in as official spokesman for the Toronto Raptors. So he officially said goodbye to DeMar DeRozan, and he welcomed Kawhi Leonard with a tearjerker. Like, this was hard. Almost 10 million thank yous on behalf of your city. You're a fixture in Toronto forever, and you gave everything you had through your leadership and had the most exciting years, blah, 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 blah. And then he welcomed Kawhi. Look forward to seeing the next chapter. And I'm going to have your jersey on. Like, and he didn't say all that. But he should have done the In Your Feelings challenge with him.
Yeah, I kind of like it, though. I mean, Drake. Yeah. But you know what? I've said it before. I don't like you infusing yourself into every single thing. Rather.
Yes. Yeah, he definitely does.
Stay in your lane a little bit.
Do you think this was intentional from the Spurs? Because a lot of people thought it was. Because look at the font sizes.
Oh, dude.
Like,
yeah.
So you got the huge welcome to Mar, Jakob. Thank you, Danny. And then tiny. You could almost, like, it's like the test at the eye doctor, like, to go in that small.
Like, thank you, Kawhi.
Thank you.
Yeah, and they're so good and so passive aggressive and so, like, subtle. Like, yes, that was intentional for
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. All right, Debo, let's do some topics, man. What do you got for us today?
Speaking of In My Feelings, DeMarcus Cousins not known to care about the feelings of refs. He's not known to care about the feelings of players that he bruises in the paint. He doesn't care about your feelings or my feelings.
I'm saying that now because I'm seeing the reaction, but I didn't get I knew what my ace was, and we made the call.
I like his style. Like, I do. Like,
true.
Yeah. Like, why?
Learn that from you.
Why would I give a rip about you as a fan? And like, this is my career. I'm the one that's torn Achilles. I'm the one that has to rehab. I'm the one that at the end of the day, if I don't have a championship, someone's going to crucify as not being the type of player that I probably should have been. So this is the perfect time to get it right now. I'm going to go get it. And I don't NBA players end up stop giving a rip what fans think. Do you, bro? It's your career, it's your life, it's your family's well-being.
You would have never heard these types of comments 10 years ago. You know why? Because we didn't have Twitter. We didn't have Instagram. This is a direct result of players being because they get more of a real glimpse of what fans think. Because
right.
All it takes a fan to do is go tweet at them, fire it away, and then the player reads it, and you're like, this is the people that are rooting for me, supposedly.
Right.
And so it's really easy to become disgruntled and be like, you know what? Screw you guys, exactly like he said. So I think it's the where we are as a society, and it kind of stinks, but I think you're going to see more and more players get like that.
Yeah, I think it's cool, though, because, like, we are not allowed, like, when we're on the court, we get fined for telling you to go.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know what I mean? And you buy the ticket, and that's what you hide behind. Like, I buy a ticket, I can say whatever I want.
Right.
Okay, well, I got social media, baby. I can say whatever I want. Like, exactly. I don't got no beef with it.
Another top five pick on the move this offseason, new Bull Jabari Parker is a Chicago kid, and former Bull Derrick Rose is also a Chicago kid. So Parker wasn't taking any D-Rose slander during his introductory press conference yesterday.
But as a Bulls fan, what did you think of kind of the rise and fall, like what happened with Derrick and seeing how high he went and then kind of how low things got? How did you look at it from afar?
I mean, Derrick had no lows. He didn't because he still maintained. And, you know, Derrick is a legend no matter what. Like, I don't like how you explain that.
Raja, he must be talking to your boy
but
Griezmann,
as a Bulls fan, what did you?
Because he said this the other day after the World Cup win.
We are really proud of all of us, why we did people criticize us from the start. Now you can see Antoine Griezmann.
It's going to be in English, Antoine. It's going to be in English, under pressure.
I love Derrick Rose.
That was so well done.
Where did that come from?
That's so,
that was incredible.
That's so random. But I mess with Jabari. I mess with Jabari though, because like that's his boy. They're from the same town. And although I question Derek and whether he loved the game and so on and so forth, he was fantastic when he was healthy. And it was only
top five player.
Fantastic. And it was only like when you're injured that often, major knee injuries, and your game is predicated on speed and like agility and burst. Like, you're not going to be the same guy when you come back after multiple injuries. So that was only when the decline started happening. Before that, Derrick Rose was fantastic.
Boom.
So it was supposed to be a special day for Russell Wilson. He released his signature shoe, the Danger Russ one to me. Looks fine. Me and Danny talked about it this morning. But you guys are the sneakerheads. However, this next video doesn't look fine. Russ and his wife Sierra at the ESPYs. The guy who created the In My Feelings challenge, which Sierra killed and Russell Wilson promptly murdered, asked for a pick, but he stiff arms Russell Wilson out of the frame in the process, and you know Russell is salty over that.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that he had to like just get out of here. He's like, I don't want you in the picture. I love that. I love how awkward Russell is.
Yeah, he's like, okay. He's a comedian from where's he from? New York?
I don't know, but he's killing it. Like all of a sudden he is absolutely blown up. He the shoes though, those are the equivalent of the Steph Curry shoes, which got crushed because they were all white and they look like nursing shoes.
Yes.
Like those are the exact same version, except they're all black. And I just don't like shoes that don't have any accents that are all one color, like that block color.
I just don't
like it.
Yeah, I don't like the block color. I don't like the shoe in general. Like, why is Russell Wilson selling shoes? Like, why is he selling not cleats?
Why not? Wouldn't you take them though?
Like Nike, like how many football players get their own shoe from Nike that's not a cleat?
Right. But you won't sell cleats. You need to sell shoes.
Nah, but I'm asking, like, how many people have done, like, Dion did it, right?
Yeah.
Who
not
else?
Not many football players. Like, J.J. Watt has a shoe, but
J.J. Watt has a shoe? See, this is ignorance. I don't know anything.
I think it's Reebok. I think that's why.
No, I'm just wondering, like, Russell Wilson, like, maybe he's that dope. I mean, I just wouldn't go out and buy a Russell Wilson shoe.
Well,
Nike.
Well, we'll find out how many people will. Well, all right, we teased it off the top of the show. Let's get to our boy Barrett Salih. He is live in Atlanta at the unofficial start of college football season. That's why I love it, because you start to get the blood flowing a little bit, talking some ball. Barrett, how's it going, man? Atlanta or Birmingham? First off, which one's been better?
Selfishly, man, Atlanta, because it's 9 miles from my house. But honestly, professionally too, it's way better because things are more spread out. It's more of a convention than it is a media event. And you actually get to talk to people instead of shouting over people to talk to these athletes and these players or these coaches. So I like it here. I think it'll end up staying here next year. Obviously, it's going to be in Birmingham, but it wouldn't surprise me because the Hall of Fame's here. It just makes sense that this sort of serve, like you said, as the unofficial kickoff to college football season.
All right, before we get to the hardcore football stuff, let's have some fun with a little superlatives here. All right, so the coach, I'm going to give you some harder questions because I don't want to give you the easy layups. So you can't answer Nick Saban to this first one, all right? It's the coach the least enthused to talk to the media, not named Nick Saban.
Oh, man, the least enthused to talk to the media, not – you know Barry Odom from Missouri. I mean, he's all football. He's always been all football. And I think in this event, you know, Missouri could use a guy to sort of step up and be a little bit more personable, but he just doesn't care. You know, he's a defensive-minded, hard-nosed coach. And, you know, he comes in and says, like, look, I'm here. My defense is going to be this. My offense is going to be this. Drew Lock's a good quarterback. Bye. So, he wants to coach. He doesn't want to be here. And quite honestly, with the way that football team looks this year, I probably wouldn't want to be here either.
All right, so what's the most common question posed to these coaches or athletes?
Talk about X, and mostly yes. Talk about your quarterback situation, whether it's a controversy like Tua and Jalen, or you know a guy like Jarrett Stidham or Drew Lock or Jake Bentley or you know whoever is an established quarterback. It's basically talk about your quarterback, which is the lamest, most ridiculous question ever. We're supposed to actually ask questions that you know have you know a question mark attached to the end of them, but it's like there are so many quarterback issues in this league, whether it be you know a guy like Stidham or Drew Lock or Nick Fitzgerald who are established stars. Or, you know, questions like you have at Alabama and Texas A&M. So I think that's the thing that sort of stands out is that, you know, on the positive side or on the negative side, there always seems to be something that you can talk about and address from the quarterback situation.
All right, talk about Tua versus Jen. No, I'm just kidding. But let's do a little bit of Bama, though, because the Bama is awesome. They're good. They're going to get back, and they'll be good as long as Saban is around. So yesterday, he was trying to reassure Bama fans, as he always does, and he said, Miss Terry doesn't want me at home, talking about his wife. He's 66. He's going to be 67 during the season. How much longer do you think Saban is on the sidelines?
Yeah, Miss Terry doesn't want him on a boat either. We know how that went this summer with his players. No, I think, look, his contract is through another, what, 6-7 years. I would be surprised if he lasts through that contract. I mean, I've always been of the belief that Nick Saban's going to find a way to ride off in the sunset. You know, last year, obviously, it would have been a good spot to do that, but he's not ready to hang it up. So, I don't think he'll be around through the end of the contract. At that point, he'll be, what, 72, 73 years old. He's got grandkids now. And look, there's a personal side to all of this. You know, at some point, you realize as a grown-up, as a man, as an adult, that you know you miss a lot if you're a coach. You miss a lot of your family growing up. So I think the fact that he's a grandfather now, he has changed a little bit. He's certainly softened up personally a little bit. And I think over the next couple of years, he's going to say, hey, look, I got this with my kids. I didn't get to see a lot of them. I didn't get to see them grow up. Now I've got these grandkids. Let me go ahead and find a way to ride off in the sunset. But he's going to try to find the perfect spot. I think he's going to, you know, whether it's another walk-off touchdown to win a national championship or something else, I think he's going to look for that moment and then know that that's it and hang it up and then enjoy his family time.
And so there's a huge focus on the coaches this year. There's six new ones in the conference. Like, who do you expect to have the most success off the bat, and who do you think will struggle the most in their first year or two?
Well, I think right off the bat, it'll be Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State. I know that's not a sexy team and not a sexy name, but you know he's got 17 starters back. He's got a quarterback situation that's as healthy as any in the SEC outside of Tuscaloosa with Nick Fitzgerald and Keaton Thompson. He's got a really good group of running backs, and that defense at Mississippi State was really good last year, and they returned basically everybody. So I think in the short term, Mississippi State's a team that's going to be at the very least a tough out, and Joe Moorhead's enough of an offensive genius where he's going to make that offense click, I think, better than it has under Dan Mullen. And we talked to Nick Fitzgerald yesterday, and he said, hey, look, there's a lot more downfield in this offense. Dan Mullen has always been more about efficiency. That's what Tim Tebow did. That's what he won the Heisman for. But when he got to the NFL, he wasn't necessarily groomed for success. I think Joe Moorhead, you saw what he did at Penn State with Trace McSorley. The dude's a wizard. He knows how to get production out of his quarterback. So I think Mississippi State, at least in the short term, is going to have the most success of the new coaches with Joe Moorhead. The least success, I think, is Chad Morris. And that's not to say Arkansas made the wrong hire with Chad Morris. I just think with those pieces, I mean, Brett Bielema to Chad Morris is like going from one side to the other. The pendulum swings to way to the other side. I just don't think they've got a quarterback. Their top quarterback, Cole Kelly, he's never run anything like this. He doesn't run tempo. That's not anything he does. And then on top of that, I think he failed miserably by hiring John Chavis as his defensive coordinator. You have to find a coordinator defensively that can deal with these up-tempo offense. And John Chavis, I think, stubbornly just flat-out refuses to do that. So I think it's going to take a long time for Arkansas to become relevant in the SEC West if they ever do under Chad Morris.
Barrett, I took a little bit of heat from some Georgia fans because I said they had to prove last season wasn't a fluke. And that's probably the wrong word to use because I don't think it was a fluke, but I do feel like they have to validate. Like, they have to show that they've arrived on the scene, that they're here to stay. And with a schedule where they go to LSU, they play Auburn, those are the two teams from the SEC West. You get Mullen at Florida. They should be better. Are you as confident as everybody is that that Georgia is just going to waltz through the SEC East and be back in the SEC championship game?
Yeah, I do think they'll waltz through the SEC East, Danny, but I'm with you in the respect that, you know, they have to prove it. You've seen first-time head coaches or young head coaches in this conference have some success and then fizzle out. You've also seen some coaches like Urban Meyer and Nick Saban when he comes in and, you know, have this ultimate success. I mean, look, Gene Chizik won a national championship in his second year, but he didn't know how to handle success. Will Muschamp went to a Sugar Bowl in his second year, didn't know how to handle success. Gus Malzahn almost got fired after, you know, becoming 13 seconds within a national championship. Then he figured it out last year. So there are ups and downs. And I think for Kirby Smart, he's never done this before. Now, he has more than 10 years under his belt on Saban's staff. So he's seen firsthand what it takes to sustain success. I think he's got an easier job than most of those other coaches because he's at Georgia. Kirby Smart can recruit heavily. He's done a great job here. So I think from a personnel standpoint, he's on the right track. But no, I mean, you're right. Kirby did a great job in year two. Now he's got to figure out how to coach with a target on his back. And that's not easy, especially for young coaches. I think he can do it. I think the experience under Saban will help. I think the personnel on that roster will help. But no, I mean, I think that's a valid point to say, hey, look, we got to see what he does now to sort of validate what kind of coach and what kind of program Georgia is. I think he'll do it, but it's okay to play a wait-and-see game.
Quickly, in about 30 seconds, what's the fan base most likely to customize a jersey with the down and distance on it?
Alabama. We saw that yesterday. Look, I didn't go over to the Hall of Fame all that much, but I did see ring hat guy. I did see all the crazy fans, all the Feinbaum callers that are on the payroll were over there. So, yeah, I mean, Alabama fans are a little bit crazy over there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, Barrett, thanks a lot. Make sure you go follow Barrett at Barrett Salee on Twitter. He's been at SEC Media Days. He's always here on CBS Sports HQ. He's a great football writer and analyst for us here. Thanks for joining us, man.
All right, see you, boys.
All right, I had I told Debo I wanted him to Photoshop that jersey where it said second place SEC West on it, but I think it was a little bit too complicated to try to do that, which I think would have been more And it would have been a great troll job for that one. But he didn't get that done. He's been working too hard for us here. All right. Enjoy your British Open today. I knew you're going to do that, right? Take a little nap.
Take a little nap.
Yeah. So enjoy that. We'll break that down tomorrow. See if Tiger Woods wins his matchup with Matsuyama.
Yeah.
We'll get some other stuff. See if Kawhi Leonard shows up for the Raptors and gives a little opening press conference. We'll get to that. But as always, make sure you go follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Kanell and Bell.